91.3 WLRN presents South Florida Arts Beat. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Today on our fundraising edition, Artistic Director Lourdes Lopez joins us to talk with contributor Charles Greenfield about a new season of Dance Delights from the award-winning Miami City Ballet. The new Art Deco Museum on Miami Beach is now open to the public. The Miami Design Preservation League's Programs and Outreach Director Judith Frankel brings us the exciting programming details. Please stay with us to catch the conversation and information coming up on South Florida Arts Beat right after these news updates from NPR and the WLRN Miami Herald News. Welcome to a fundraising edition of South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Please keep our pledge lines ringing while our program is on the air. Your contribution acts as a vote of confidence for our arts coverage on WLRN. Coming up later on the show, we'll take a look at what the new Art Deco Museum on Miami Beach is all about with Judith Frankel, Programs and Outreach Director for the Miami Design Preservation League. Now, contributor Charles Greenfield talks about an exciting 29th season schedule for the Miami City Ballet with their artistic director, Lourdes Lopez.
Miami City Ballet has entered a new era after over two decades under Edward Villela. For 2 years now, new leader and artistic director Lourdes Lopez has focused the company, its goals, staff, and artistic path in a different direction. One of the largest ballet companies in the U.S. with a budget around $16 million, its performance venues cover the entire South Florida region from the Arts Center's Ziff Ballet Opera House, the Broward Center for the Performing Arts, West Palm Beach's Kravis Center for the Performing Arts, to the Artist Naples Concert Hall and Theater. Now the reins of power have been handed over to a new generation. Today, the company is 50 dancers strong and has expanded its repertory to nearly 100 ballets. Each season, the company presents a collage of iconic works by such esteemed choreographers as George Balanchine, Jerome Robbins, Twyla Tharp, and Paul Taylor, alongside beloved classics such as Giselle and Don Quixote, while introducing new works to audiences by some of today's most acclaimed choreographers, including Justin Peck and Alexei Ratmansky. Miami City Ballet was recently designated as Best Theater Company by the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel. Havana-born Lourdes Lopez was a principal dancer with the New York City Ballet, worked with Balanchine and Jerome Robbins, and in 2002 became the executive director of the George Balanchine Foundation. 2 years ago, she received the prestigious Jerome Robbins Award and became artistic director of Miami City Ballet. Miami City Ballet's season begins October 17th with the grand full-scale ballet Romeo and Juliet, choreographed by John Cranko at the Arts Center's Ziff Ballet Opera House. The season runs through April 19, 2015, with the very acclaimed young choreographer Justin Peck's Heartscape, a world premiere. Recently, I had the chance to talk to Lourdes Lopez about the upcoming season and the new direction of Miami City Ballet. Lourdes Lopez, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
It is a pleasure to be here once again. Thank you for having me.
You have been artistic director at Miami City Ballet for two seasons. The Miami Herald's dance critic Jordan Levin just did a big piece on you and the company with an emphasis on reorganization and new concepts on increasing audience and financing. Could you summarize the intersection of commerce and artistry in Miami City Ballet's new trajectory?
Well, we're very grateful for the Herald for the story on Miami City Ballet and the new phase, rather the new life that we're going into. And a dance company, ballet company, really has two sides. It has the artistic and it has what I call the financial side. So the artistic was in place. It was really about bringing in new works for me in terms of the organization and the dancers, new works, new choreographers, the dancers think that would excite an audience. But then there was also the financial picture, and that really required similarly to the artistic, but even more drastic, a financial turnaround of the organization. And that takes time. I have to tell you, honestly, it starts with the arts. I mean, people come, we're a performing art company, so people come to see live art. So you can't think of it as just completely a business, but unfortunately there is that side that you want to be aware of, and you have to be cognizant of and take care of. So that's a very slow transition. We've made some, I think, very impressive leaps forward. And again, just because I think this community truly understands the value of having a ballet company of the level of Miami City Ballet and its community. I mean, it's what every great city needs: a symphony, they need a theater, they need ballet, they need opera, they need the arts. It's not just business. It's what gives its depth.
And you have some new staff at Miami City Ballet. I read that you have a new position called Community Outreach and Special Projects. What's the aim of the Miami City Ballet in terms of outreach and audience participation? Does ballet need to go out of the box to find an audience?
It does, because, Charles, we have so much competition now as a community. We can open up our computers with any download, any Hulu, every movie, every concert, every song is available at the snap of a finger. And so we're competing against that, and it's important to go out into the community, number one, to show them what we're capable of and what we do. And number two, because that philosophy, if you build it, they will come, is really just no longer true as far as I'm concerned. You have to get out in the community. And number three, I truly believe, and I believe this with all my heart, and I'll go to my grave saying this, that dance, it empowers individuals, it can change individuals, it can create change. That's what the arts are all about. So we have to go out there and create that change on our own.
Now, as a teacher, tell us about your dancers at Miami City Ballet. Where do they come from? Technique, what you emphasize. Is there a Miami City Ballet stamp?
Yes, there is a Miami City Ballet stamp. But first, I want to say that I'm so proud of my dancers. They bring me tremendous joy. They really are an extraordinary group of artists. They worked really hard every day. They're focused. They're not jaded. They're a family. They're a community. They support each other. And I think the stamp of a Miami City Ballet dancer is tremendous passion and energy and musicality on stage. I mean, if I had three words in which to describe a Miami City Ballet, those are the words that I would use, passion, musicality, and tremendous amount of energy on stage.
Now, besides the company dancers, there is the Miami City Ballet School, headed by Darlene Callahan, and considered one of the nation's foremost pre-professional training programs for ballet dancers. Jordan Levin says there are changes in the focus of the training, from energy, urgency, and musicality to traditional technique and diversity. Could you describe the school, size, summer program, direction?
Well, I think in that respect, really, there hasn't been any change in terms of the technique. We go back to the technique that the type of technique that we were taught at the School of American Ballet, which is a school that George Balanchine created, which is the company and the mentor that both Edward Villel and myself danced under. And that is that you need your foundation. You need your classical foundation. It's like playing a musical instrument. If you don't know your score, if you don't know your notes, if you really don't know play the basics, you cannot play jazz, you cannot play rock, you can't play, whatever other genres are out there. So what we put in place in terms of the school was we introduced a syllabus, which is the first time that Miami City Ballet School had ever had one, and it is teaching you the classical. It's the bedrock of our foundation, of our vocabulary, and from that is what the Balanchine technique stemmed from.
Now, you did mention Balanchine, and you were a principal dancer for the New York City Ballet with both Balanchine and Jerome Robbins. Tell us briefly about these two legendary choreographers, their style and influence on your artistic goals for the company.
They were a huge influence. And in fact, every dancer that I look at and every ballet that I look at and every choreographer that I speak to is really influenced by those two individuals, by George Balanchine and Jerome Robbins. They were two geniuses. I mean, how many people have the opportunity to say, I worked with two geniuses, and they're also very different personalities and very different creative geniuses. So everything that I do in terms of even marketing, press, programming, costumes, how a dancer wears their hair, makeup, it all stems from that very high artistic standard that I learned from watching and being around Balanchine and Robbins. And that's what I love about being down here in Miami, is the ability to bring that and really give it to these dancers and give it to the community.
Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about your Cuban roots and the Caribbean Spanish influence for Miami City Ballet. There is one, isn't there?
Yes, of course. You know, it's funny, I don't even think of Miami anymore as a melting pot. I think of it as a mosaic. You know, all these cultures really coming together, holding their own. And the company is representative, really, of the community. It's filled with Brazilians, Colombians, and Cubans, and Americans. And we have a French dancer now. And it's so exciting because we're like a Benetton ad when you look at us in class. And I love that.
And finally, you mentioned world-class city, which we are becoming. How do you see the Miami City Ballet in the context of this very booming cultural region now?
Well, when you look at Miami City Ballet, we are one of the largest, if not the largest, performing arts organization in Florida. And we are also an international. In other words, we're known globally. We tour Paris. We tour New York. We tour the West Coast. We have, you know, wonderful plans. We're moving ahead. So right now, Miami City Ballet is bringing Miami to the rest of the world through what we're dancing.
Now, in the second part of my interview with Miami City Ballet Artistic Director Lourdes Lopez, we will discuss its very busy four-part season for 2014-2015, including two company premieres, one U.S. premiere, and a world premiere.
Please stay with us. The conversation will continue on South Florida Arts Beat right after these messages. Welcome back to a fundraising edition of South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. Now let's return to the conversation between our contributor, Charles Greenfield, and his esteemed guest.
Lourdes Lopez, welcome back to part two of Arts Beat.
I'm so happy to be back. Thank you.
Let's get into the season. Starting October 17th to November 23rd in three counties, you will perform in Program 1, John Cranko's highly acclaimed Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare's memorable drama, Love and Death, elegant sets, romantic costumes, and Prokofiev's great score. What specifically is the appeal of the choreography with such powerful music? What are some key moments?
Well, the key moment is obviously the balcony scene, which is when the Romeo first meets Juliet. It's just evocative of romance, of tenderness, of passion. And the music, I mean, just everything, the music, the fact that she's up on this balcony, the fact that they've met for the first time. If you're a romantic mush like I am, you're just, your heart and your eyes just well up.
Well, I was married in Verona, so I, of course, find this very personal. But the rest of it, though, there are some big group scenes that are quite effective.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's a great piece, not only for audiences. I mean, obviously, it's Romeo and Juliet. Everybody knows the story. The music is recognizable. We've all grown up with Romeo and Juliet. But it's great for a company because a full length really brings an entire company together as a community. You are rehearsing this 6 hours a day, and you're in those two studios, the entire company, most everyone is always on stage, and it brings them together as a group, you know, which I think is very important in terms of a company.
And it's Renaissance costumes.
It's Renaissance costumes. It's pantomime. It's narrative. So as an artist, you're walking into the theater understanding that you've got to carry this story on for the next 3 hours, and that's a very different type of commitment and concentration.
Now, George Balanchine's The Nutcracker with music by Tchaikovsky is, of course, one of the Christmas holidays' most popular events, especially for families with kids. As a Balanchine student, what special dance qualities do you focus on with Marie, her prince, and with the corps of dancers in the big set scenes?
Well, with the children, it's a little different, specifically with Marie and the prince, and even Fritz, which is Marie's brother. They have to be animated. They have to really be musical, because there are some musical cues, and you're actually dancing quite a bit. There obviously has to be some sense of being able to act a little bit. With the prince, you want someone who has a natural elegance. With Marie, you want someone who has more of a childlike, innocent, soft demeanor. And Fritz, you're just looking for someone who's just not very well behaved.
Well, you may find that in the audience.
We'll take them.
Now, Balanchine famously said, "See the music, hear the dance." In program two called Hear the Dance, January 9th to February 8th, you're presenting Twyla Tharp's nine Sinatra songs, Paul Taylor's Mercuric Tidings with music from Schubert, and Balanchine's Symphony in Three Movements with music from countryman Igor Stravinsky. It sounds like each dance gets harder and harder in this series.
Well, it is. The reason I put them together was specifically for that, because not only are they three of America's really great choreographers of the 20th century, but also these works specifically for each of them really, really connects to the music, to the score. And they've responded to it in a way that, you know, for example, Mercuric Tidings, there's a specific way that Paul Taylor mimicked the virtuosity, the rhythm, the downbeat of Schubert's piece. And then with Symphony in Three Movements, which is Stravinsky composed that after World War II. And you hear that. You hear that anxiety. You hear that kind of drilling, the military. And you see that also in Mr. Balanchine's choreography, how he brings in the men come out and they're jogging and the women are marching. So to me, these three works coming together by three great, great choreographers of the 20th century who responded so specifically to the score that they're basing their work on.
What are some of the Sinatra songs that we might know?
Everything from Old Blue Eyes, from Something Stupid to Strangers in the Night to, I mean, it's, you know, it's wonderful because you really feel, and this is why she did it, you feel like you're in a nightclub. She has the dancers really dance all the way downstage, and it's a very intimate feeling with them.
Now, program three is called Passion and Grace. It's from February 13th to March 22nd. There's Richard Alston's Carmen, Twyla Tharp's Sweet Fields, and Balanchine's very popular Allegro Brillante with the Tchaikovsky score. The pieces have lots of energy and verve. Why don't you deconstruct these works for us?
Well, the Allegro Brillante is based on, I believe, Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto 3, or Suite 3, and it's an unfinished composition of Tchaikovsky. He passed away before he was able to finish it. And what's interesting to me is that the curtain goes up and the dancers are dancing. So it's a little bit like Mr. Balanchine said, you know, Tchaikovsky never finished it, so I'm never really going to start it. But it's everything he knew about classical ballet. That's what he said, that he put in everything he knew about classical ballet in this 17-piece work. And what I love about Allegro is that you have a full orchestra for a 17-minute work, and when you look at what the dancers do, you understand that Balanchine was saying you need to match what's happening in the pit. It's a virtuosic work. It's high energy. It's power. It's a marathon. The curtain goes up, and you go, 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 go until the curtain comes down.
And there's the Carmen, and there's also the Tharp Sweet Fields.
The Tharp, I'm very excited about because it's something that's very different for this company, and really, I believe, very different for this audience. It's based on Billings' 18th century Shaker hymns, and it's celestial. It's a very sophisticated work, but it's celestial. It's a work about a community. It's about death. It's about birth. It's about love. It's about redemption. And the company, I've given it to the top levels of the core dancers, and they've really embraced it and have really come together as a group to hopefully perform it. And I think the fact that it's really community-based is what they've responded to as dancers.
Now, we have to talk a little bit about this young choreographer. We don't have much time, but the young choreographer is Justin Peck. It's in the last program, which is March 27th to April 19th. It's called Points of Departure. Tell us very briefly about those pieces.
Justin is just not a young choreographer. He's, at this point, one of the youngest talent and greatest talents that we have in terms of ballet, which means the point shoe. And he's really considered choreographically very, very gifted. I mean, very, very gifted and musical as well. So we have put him together with a street artist from Miami, Shepherd Fairey, whose work you can see at Wynwood Walls. And the piece is a very Miami piece. It's Miami inspired, and it's inspired by the Wynwood Walls and by the dancers of Miami City Ballet.
Well, I wish we had more time. There's so much more to talk about, but Lourdes Lopez, thank you so much for participating on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you for having me, and I look forward to seeing you at the season.
The 2014-15 season for the Miami City Ballet brings continued high-level ballet to South Florida. It offers the enviable opportunity to young artists from all over the world the ability to study and excel on South Beach in Miami City Ballet's Architectonica Design Studios. The season's four programs bring sophistication and classical proportion to dance lovers and invites newcomers to the surprisingly intense and beguiling world of dance, enhanced by great music. Tickets are available for Romeo and Juliet starting October 17th through the Miami City Ballet box office at 305-929-7010 or toll-free at 877-929-7010 or go to their website at miamicityballet.org. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
Charles Greenfield is a classical music contributor for the Sun Sentinel and has written for the Miami Herald. You can email him at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. It's a fundraising edition of South Florida Arts Beat. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Please keep our pledge lines ringing while the show is on the air. The Miami Design Preservation League has been preserving, protecting, and promoting the Art Deco District and surrounding areas on Miami Beach since 1976. They've recently opened their Art Deco Museum to further enhance their mission. To find out more, we invited their programs and outreach director, Judith Frankel, on the show to get us up to speed. And Judith Frankel, thank you so much for joining us on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's very exciting to find out that the Miami Design Preservation League has opened its museum, and we want to find out all about that. What is involved in the museum now?
So we're calling it the Art Deco Museum, but it really encompasses much more than Art Deco. The purpose of the museum is to give people a sense of the history of Miami Beach and the story of the Miami Design Preservation League, as well as the architecture of Miami Beach. And we're known for Art Deco, which is why we're calling it the Art Deco Museum. That's how we're known widely. But there's more than Art Deco in Miami Beach. And Miami Beach's story really is a part of the development of the architecture.
You say there's more. You're referring to MIMO, Miami Modern, and...
Yeah. Miami Modern is the post-war style that was very predominantly used in Miami Beach and elsewhere in the area. But also preceding Art Deco, was Mediterranean Revival was very popular.
Love that.
And there are some other historic styles. I think of the Betsy Hotel on Ocean Drive. That's kind of a colonial plantation revival style. There's a few vernacular buildings which predate the Mediterranean Revival. Mm-hmm. So there's a few other historic. And then, of course, we have contemporary architecture in Miami Beach, which is part of the, you know, the changing face of the beach.
So the Art Deco Museum will also feature Miami Beach visual memoirs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially video exhibitions. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so the third part of the museum, which is the history of Miami Beach, we're telling through the stories of people who have been involved in the beach's development in one way or the other. So it's called the Miami Beach Visual Memoirs Project. And that project comes from a grant that we have from the Miami Beach Visitor and Convention Authority. And the goal of that project is to capture interviews with interesting people who have a story to tell that relates to the beach. So it's telling the story of Miami Beach through these interviews. And we've created an archive of these interviews, which were being housed through FIU's digital library. And so when you're in the museum, we have an exhibit and a kind of a black box viewing area where you can hear some of these interviews. We also have a computer area where you can access the actual full-length interview archives for educational or research purposes.
So you no doubt have a lot of video of the MDPL founder, Barbara Capitman, talking about, I want to put together this organization. Tell me more.
So unfortunately, she's deceased, and the project only started a couple years ago. So she's not actually part of this archive.
But no,
but we
early,
certainly have.
But no early news footage of her or anything like that?
Yeah. So the project focuses on live interviews.
Oh, okay.
So we certainly have early news footage and things from the Wolfson archives that we have in our own archives. But for this project, it's just live interviews. But there's certainly lots of people who met her on both sides of the historic preservation issue who talk about her and the story of preservation.
I always wanted to see some footage, perhaps in the Florida Moving Image Archive, of Barbara getting in the way of... the deconstructors who wanted to take down the senator.
I unfortunately didn't have the opportunity to meet her, but she was a diminutive lady who really made her voice well heard. She's pictured in these black judge's robes because she wanted to make sure that they knew that she was sitting in judgment of what was happening. She had a flair for the dramatic, so.
Now, the Art Deco Museum will have so many different events. You'll have rotating exhibitions, and it'll be essentially a resource area with the Miami Design Preservation League archives. How I'd love to go through them. And your lecture series, we missed the lecture entitled 100 Years of Miami Beach History with the wonderful historian Seth Bramson. He's a friend of the show and really doing some wonderful documentation of South Florida and the little towns that we have. But coming up on October 16th, you've got a lecture with Alan Shulman called 100 Years of Architecture. Can you give us a taste of what we might encounter?
I can't tell you exactly what Alan has planned. You'll have to come out, but he's certainly a great speaker and presenter, and we're excited to hear what he's put together. The concept for this fall series is to get you ready for the Miami Beach Centennial. So we picked four topics that we thought would kind of lead the public into that centennial feeling. So we started with Seth Bramson, who's the city's official historian for the centennial, giving just an overview of Miami Beach history in general. And then Alan Shulman talking about the architecture and specifically and how that's developed through the historic styles all the way through contemporary architecture. And then that's being followed by talk about tourism that's being led by George Neary of the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau. And then 100 years of celebrities. So you can't talk about the history of Miami Beach without talking about how it's been influenced by celebrities and fame and all those good things. So that's happening November 18th.
Wow, the lecture series alone just sounds so dynamic. So you'll also be featuring visual memoirs. And of course, there's always the Art Deco walking tours. And you're looking for people to volunteer to lead those tours, to be trained, right, and then to lead those tours. And of course, it all leads up to Art Deco Weekend 2015, January 16th through the 18th. That will also feature a centennial lecture series. That sounds great.
Yeah, so the centennial is really exciting. Everybody in Miami Beach, all the different cultural organizations have developed programming and geared their usual annual programming around the theme of the centennial. Because it's, you know, it only happens once every 100 years.
Once every 100 years. Might not be around for the next one.
So our centennial lecture series, it starts during Art Deco Weekend. During Art Deco Weekend, we're going to cover the Art Deco years, so the 20s and 30s. And then we're going to continue through the spring and fall. So we've divided the topics into kind of 10-year increments. Altogether, it'll be 10 lectures covering the 10 decades of the last 100 years.
The Miami Design Preservation League, the not-for-profit, is a wonderful organization, quote, preserving, promoting, and protecting the Miami Beach Art Deco Architectural Historic District since 1976. And we all applaud what great work you all are doing. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for coming on the show, Ms. Judith Frankel, Programs and Outreach Director of the Miami Design Preservation League.
Thank you for having us on. Please come out and visit the museum.
The Art Deco Museum is located at 1001 Ocean Drive on Miami Beach. It's open Tuesday through Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And for more information, go to mdpl.org, as in the Miami Design Preservation League.org, or call 305-531-3484. Please keep our pledge lines ringing on a fundraising edition of South Florida Arts Beat. Quick two mentions before we go. Red Bull's Siempre Fresco and Red Bull Music Academy celebrate two generations of Latin music with a public lecture, studio collaboration, and a public performance October 16th through the 18th in Miami. For more information, go to redbull.com/Siempre Fresco. The Perez Art Museum Miami offers free tours this Monday, Columbus Day, October 13th. For more information, go to pamm.org. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for your kind and generous contributions made during this hour. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer, and Andy Wagner is our technical director. We'd like to thank today's contributor, Charles Greenfield. Please call us with your comments, 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information, 305-995-2221, or email it to us at info@wlrn.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Please keep those pledge lines ringing all throughout the afternoon and early evening. We have a long way to go to meet our goal. Have yourself a great weekend, and please keep your dial set to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.